I am Nirmala, and this is my husband, Dharmadas. We're from Ananda, Sacramento, and we're very happy to be with you here today. I have to compliment the choir on that beautiful song. It's a hard song to do so beautifully, and I think it's one of the best times I've ever heard it done. And it's all the sweeter because the attunement wasn't immediate. And that is such an analogy for us, isn't it? Our attunement isn't automatic. We have to work at it. We have to not give up. We have to not go running off to the wings. I can't do it. We have to keep trying. And when we do keep trying, something beautiful happens. Something magical happens. This reading, that wasn't it. Let's keep trying. This is a very wonderful story from the autobiography. The story of Yogananda's great healing through the intercession of Lahiri Mahashaya, intervention of Lahiri. And there are many things to ponder in this story. One of them is that we need to think about how it was that Yogananda and his mother were able to magnetically draw that grace of God through Lahiri, through the channel of Lahiri. How did they do that? Well, one thing we know is that the situation was desperate. Yogananda's life was despaired of. His mother was frantic. That means there was a tremendous amount of focused energy. They could have been praying like this some days or maybe even weeks ahead of time. But it was in that moment when Yogananda's life was slipping away that they put all of their energy, all of their willpower. There were no extraneous thoughts of, oh, I wonder what's happening in the next room or what's for dinner. Nothing. Every ounce of their mind and their body and their soul was focused. Bow before that picture of Lahiri Mahashaya. If you offer your life to him, your life will be spared. That kind of energy is what creates the magnetism to draw grace. And we have to cultivate that. It's not automatic. It's not any more automatic than attunement is automatic. We have to learn to concentrate, to focus all of our mind. Remember that beautiful story from the Bhagavad Gita? Dronacharya asks all the archers to come up and try to hit the bird at the top of the tree. And he asks them all, what do you see? And they're standing there, well, I see you, and I see the tree, and I see the sky. And Dronacharya just says, well, shoot, go ahead. And they all miss. Arjuna comes, what do you see? I see the eye of the bird. Shoot, I know you will make it. And he did. That's the kind of concentration that we have, the kind of focus. And I was reading recently, someone was saying that when you know that you're going to die in 2 weeks, it focuses the mind wonderfully. Suddenly you have great clarity about what you want to do. And that's the kind of clarity we need to develop now, in every moment of our lives. And so Yogananda and his mother also had tremendous devotion, tremendous faith in their guru, tremendous love, tremendous trust. They gave everything to that. They offered every part of themselves at Lahiri's feet. And that's the kind of energy, devotion, faith that draws the grace of God into our hearts, into our minds. So people often ask us, I don't feel devotion. What do I do? How do I start? Where I don't feel it. Well, devotion is something that you have to build day by day, thought by thought. Knock and it shall be answered unto you. Seek and ye shall find. If you ask, you will receive. But if you don't ever invite God in, how can he come? It's just like with anyone else. If you meet someone that you want to get to know more, what do? You invite them in. You spend time together. You talk. You listen. You share. God is no different, except that God has been waiting for you to notice, to care, to ask for him to come in. For how many thousands and thousands of years he's been waiting patiently. It's like we have a billionaire friend that we ignore. A billionaire friend who has all the resources of the universe at his fingertips. He knows everything. He has all the connections. He has all the, he's done all the research. He knows all the history. He's waiting to help you. That's why this purification ceremony is so beautiful, because it starts with the words, I seek purification. I want God. I come into my heart. And we respond as ministers, as channels for Yogananda. We respond, open your heart to me, and I will enter. I will help you. We think we can do it on our own. We think we should do it on our own. Our effort, Yogananda said, is 25% of the equation. The effort of the guru on our behalf is in another 25%. The grace of God is 50%. But our little 25% has to be 100% of our effort, our energy, our concentration, our devotion, our trust, our love. That we can do. I also love the point that Lahiri Mahashaya was not in his body when this story happened. He had passed away shortly after Yogananda was born. And yet, he was a living presence in the lives of Yogananda and his mother. A living presence. These gurus are not just amazing stories from the past. They are a living presence. But it's up to us to attune to that presence, to find that living presence within ourselves, to invite it in, to nurture it, to cultivate it, to study their words, to be at events and ceremonies that talk about them and make them close. Ananda is all about creating the environment in which their presence can be felt. So even when Lahiri was in his body, he would tell followers who were longing to see him, he would say, "Why do you want to view these bones and flesh when I am ever within range of your spiritual sight?" So he was trying to wean them off of seeing just his physical form even before he left his body. Find me here with the spiritual eye, with your spiritual sight. Because these great masters have transcended time and space. They have conquered death. They don't need to be in a physical form. Their presence is omnipresence. Yogananda cultivated that experience of Lahiri Mahasaya long before this story of healing. Yogananda was very sad as a young child when he had only Lahiri's photo. He felt, "Oh, I wish I had been able to be with him when he was in a physical form. I am so sorry that I can't be with him." But then he started realizing that he could call on Lahiri inwardly. And he realized that he could receive guidance. He could feel the master's presence. It got to the point where the little photo of Lahiri would come out of its frame. It would take a luminous body form and sit in front of Yogananda and meditate with him. And when Yogananda would bow before that luminous image and attempt to touch his feet, the image would go back into the frame. But Yogananda had cultivated that inner relationship. And that relationship is open to all of us. Not only is it a standing invitation, but God is coaxing, asking, whispering to our souls, "Come, I am waiting for you. Come, be with me." The spiritual life is open to everyone who concentrates, who tries to attune themselves to that vibration. Everyone who, as the Bible says, "Be still and know that I am God." That's what we have to do. It's very difficult in this age of screens. Our lives are filled with little screens. I'm starting to set a timer when I sit at the computer. I will not be ruled by screens. That static of modern life is no joke. It's very powerful, and it requires great effort on our part to become still despite all the distractions of modern life. But everyone who puts out the energy, who becomes still, who with devotion centers themselves in that love of the divine presence within, the light will come. That light is our true nature. This world is a mirage. This world is Maya, delusion. That light, the light of the masters, the light that permeates all of creation, is the true reality. Look for the truth. Find that light within.
I'd like to begin with a song of Swamiji's that many of you know, and I will happily invite the choir to sing along with me if they choose to. But I wanted to give a little bit of background to the song that some of you perhaps know, but maybe not all. The song is called Walk Like a Man. It was originally titled Go On Alone. And it comes from inspiration that Swamiji received from reading a song or hearing a song of Rabindranath Tagore in India, Ekla Chalore, which became a freedom song during the effort to free India from British rule. But in that song, Tagore uses the image of whatever society says, whether people follow you or they don't follow you, do the right thing. Go by yourself if you need to. The last verse of that song, depending on the translation, of course it was written in Bengali, but depending on the translation, it says, light a fire in your heart. Let the fire of your heart light the path in front of you, even in the darkness. And whether you have bleeding feet or not, go on alone. It's pretty stringent, shall we say. But Swamiji's song is quite lovely. Walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? Let come who will, but if they all turn home, the goal still awaits you. Go on alone. Follow your dream, though it lead to worlds unknown. Life's but a shadow once our dreams have flown. What if men cry your dream is not our? Your soul knows the answer. Go on alone. Give life your heart. Bless everything that's grown. Fear not the loving. All this world's your home. Make rich the soul. Once the seed is sown, seek freedom, don't linger. Go on alone. Walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? Let come who will, but if they all turn home, the ghost still awaits you. Go on alone, go on alone, go on alone. This topic, the redeeming light and the essence of light, is an important and beautiful one. There was a bumper sticker that I saw in Sacramento some couple of years ago. And normally, you know, I've noticed bumper stickers are sort of not so much in vogue. Maybe people's cars are nicer and they don't feel like sticking them up with something sticky that has a rather trivial sentiment expressed on it. But this particular one was quite profound. Normally, the bumper stickers are sort of clever. I mean, I remember one that said, gravity, it's not just a good idea, it's the law. And I thought, yeah, okay, you know, you get points for that. You know, that's okay, that's memorable. I think that was after the seatbelt law came in. It was like, okay, good reminder. But this particular one actually stopped me and made me really think about it, because it was quite profound. It said, very simply, you are not your story. If you think about that, our whole lives are sort of predicated on the notion that we are the story that has led up to this moment, and that we will continue to be the story that follows this particular moment into the future, which is entirely false and entirely indicative of the illusion or the Maya that we walk around in. And then we have, as Nirmala was expressing from the story in the reading, we have the redeeming light, the healing light, the infinite light of God, and the reality of that in our lives. And we are that light. How do we tune into it? I had a dream fairly recently in which I was being chased. Perhaps there were one too many adventure movies that had led up to this dream. I'm not sure what precipitated it. It was quite memorable because scenario after scenario played out in this dream. It was quite elaborate, was quite involved, and it seemed like it went on for a long, long time, which probably means it was about a half hour or something. But every single time, at great effort and with extraordinary difficulty, I would escape from some difficult situation. It would be only to get caught again by the bad people or the whoever it was that was chasing me. And I got very frustrated with this dream, even while I was dreaming it. I just got frustrated enough that I finally just woke up. There was never going to be a good ending to this dream, is what I finally actually realized. It's just not going to work out this time. So I just woke up and it was like, okay, let's put that one aside. And if we think in our lives, we dream a dream of this life, and yet all that we ever have access to of that dream is the very moment that we live in right now. 5 minutes ago, 5 years ago, 5 lifetimes ago, it's all a dream. 5 minutes from now, 5 years from now, whatever into the future, it's imagination. And the light of our consciousness is illuminating whatever we focus it upon. What will that be? We can light up the frames of the movie. You know, if you think of in the old days when film was film, and you could focus on particular frames of that film, your consciousness could light up one or two or a whole little vignette full of them, but it doesn't make it any more real because it's already gone by. It's already passed. If we're going to live in this moment, we can do, as Nirmala was describing, with great devotion and with great attention, we can focus on the living presence of God. I learned something interesting about light. Quite striking, actually. In the Big Bang, the way the research at this moment gives it to us, and of course this is all subject to change, science being science, but the way science understands it now, the first picosecond, anybody know what a picosecond is? It's really, really short. It is a trillionth of a second. The first trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, they don't know what happened in that first trillionth of a second. That's, you know, that's on the map, the old maps of the world where they didn't know what it was. It said, here be griffins. Well, there's griffins in the first trillionth of a second because they just can't figure that one out. Don't know why they can't figure it out, but anyway, they can't figure it out. Between a trillionth of a second and around 10 seconds, again, how they work this all out, I do not know. Somewhere around 10 seconds after the Big Bang, we have photons going out into the universe. The creation of light itself took roughly 10 seconds. Again, how they know, I don't know. If we could be one of those photons from the 10-second mark, 14 billion years into the future, if we were riding on a photon, if your consciousness was flying across the universe at the speed of light, according to the reality of that photon, no time would have passed. It's still the exact same moment as the Big Bang. Meanwhile, 14 billion years have passed, according to our perception here around this planet. An awful lot has probably gone on in those 14 billion years. You know, we just live on one planet. I mean, what about all the other galaxies and all the other solar systems and all the other everything? We've lived all sorts of dramas. And yet, our reality is a reality of light. Now, if you think, if you're really going to catch a ride on a photon, there's a real limit to how much hand luggage you're allowed to carry. You know, the overhead bin space is really small on a photon. You can't carry much luggage. In fact, you can't carry any luggage. You can only carry consciousness. We are that consciousness. We are that divine light. And the masters give us, because they are free, because they live in that light, they can move forward, backward. They can enter the drama at any point along the way. But most of all, they can show us, you know, if we hear the word redeeming light, it may make us, the word redeeming can be a loaded term because it can make us feel like, well, I need to be redeemed. You know, I'm haven't been as illuminated as I might be. But another way to look at it is very simply, how do I step out of the drama? How do I step into the light? How do I step beyond the dream? We invite God's presence. We invite that light. We throw open the blinds of our consciousness, allow that light to come in. Yes, in meditation, of course. Yes, in satsang or group magnetism, yes. But also, as Nirmala was saying, just in the quiet moments of the day, when we could otherwise be occupied with more drama, with more dream, we simply remember, oh yes, I am that light. I am that consciousness. And the society around me may not particularly want to hear that message and may not particularly feel like following me as I follow that message. Go on alone. Live in that light of God and be one with it, because that is the actual truth. The rest of it, the dream passes. Sooner or later, we leave these bodies. Sooner or later, the chapter of our lives ends and a new one begins. Sooner or later, everything that we know passes away, and we have to embrace that infinite light. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna reveals himself to Arjuna at a certain point as the infinite. And it pretty well freaks out Arjuna. It pretty well leaves him speechless. And finally, he just simply says, please resume your former appearance as my friend, because I can't deal with this infinity. And so the first time or two that we encounter that light, it could be pretty strong medicine, because it's very impersonal. It's very much beyond the scope of our minds when we're attached to the drama. But we can make that light turn into a form of Krishna or one of the masters or any saint or anything that we feel more comfortable with in our little selves. That process, as Nirmala described, is a process of devotion, of opening the heart and awakening the heart. But let us live in the reality and the truth that we are the divine light. We are, in fact, the redeeming light. Because when we do that, and the more we do that, the more consciously and devotedly we do that, the more that reality becomes our permanent reality in our lives. God bless you.